Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Way of the Dreamer, the radio show. This is where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams and synchronicity and imagination and storytelling in our lives. We have a wonderful guest today, and I'm so excited. Her name is Toko Power-Turner. Some of you know her. She has her own dream school. She has written a marvelous new book called Belonging, which is infused with dreams. Her own and her sense of how we need to court the wild mystery available to us in dreams. Lovely writing, lovely content. Welcome, Toko Pa.
Hi, so happy to be here, Robert.
It's amazing we haven't actually spoken until now, since we've both been active in the field of dreams for many years. Your book describes how you came to it. For people who don't know you, I want to mention that your name was given to you by your parents. It has a meaning in the Maori language, right? Something like parent of the mist. Is that correct?
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Which already takes us deep into these territories, because anyone with any Celt in their veins knows the mist is the preferred passageway to the other world. So there it is in your name, which you've kept all through your life, through all your ups and downs, through all your challenges, through the periods of life when you felt orphaned and not belonging. You've kept this magical name, which is in itself very interesting. Did you ever consider changing your name?
When I was very young in public school, I had a brief period, I think I was about 9 years old, where I decided I hated my name because everybody made fun of me. So I thought I would change my name to Kara, because Kara was the name of the singer who sang the theme song to Fame. I don't know if you remember that one, but I thought that was a much more normal, accepted name. But, of course, Kara is kind of an unusual name as well. But anyway, I think I did that for about a year. I tried to get everybody to call me Kara. It was pretty effective, but somehow I returned to my actual name after that, and I've been living with it ever since.
So you've always been able to inhabit that name through all your changes. I'm the same. I've always been Robert. It's a sturdy Scandinavian name that went very Scottish. There's only Roberts of Scots descent in Canada. You know all about that. Through all the changes in my life, I've never wanted to change it. It is my name, and I won't let people fool it. I won't let them, diminish it or shorten it. All right, let's move into your dreaming and the ways that you guide us to find the essential stories of our lives, and a way of belonging and integrating more soul into our bodies through dreaming and dream work. Your book is infused with some of your own dreams and dreams of other people you've worked with. I almost fell off my chair laughing when I came to your dream about the Jungian analysts who erected a platform over the grave of a powerful witch. Do you remember that one?
Oh, I remember it.
would you like to share that with us?
I'd be curious why you almost fell off your chair, Robert.
You'd be curious what?
Why you almost fell off. You said you almost fell off your chair when you read that.
It was so funny. I mean, you've got the analysts up on the platform, and you've got the powerful primal witch down below. Who rises, it becomes a pretty bloody dream, though. It's a sort of special
yes.
thing, probably.
It was
and there's
a
blood
kind of
all over
massacre.
The place. But from it, you harvested, the understanding that dreams are our fundamental authority. It is the authority of experience. We must trust the dreamer over the analyst and interpreter, which is absolutely correct. So I found it funny because many of my best friends are Jungians. You spent your time as an intern with Jungians in Canada, and they're lovely people, but of course we need to remember that Jung himself was not a Jungian, did not subscribe to a theology with stiff, boxy categories for things, and that dreamers are going to be the primary experiences, and the dreamer is going to be the primary source of knowledge of all of this. So one of the things that I admire in you is that you harness the authority of your own immense experience and you speak from it. I mean, that's essential.
Thank you. Well, for those, just to catch up our listeners, one of the dreams that I shared in the book was that I had been studying for a long time at the Yonge Foundation of Ontario. I was acting as a kind of intern there for a number of years, and the great thing about that is there was a huge number of amazing UENs that passed through those doors, including Marion Woodman and James Hillman and Gary Sparks and lots of amazing people, and so I learned a great, great deal. But I also, as I became more skilled at working with dreams and more knowledgeable about mythology and the symbolic life, I started to have this feeling that I was outside, and I would always be outside of this incredibly exclusive organization, because in order to study at the postgraduate level as a Jungian, you first of all have to have a graduate degree, so that excluded me, but then you also have to be over the age of 35, at least it was at the time this way, and that excluded me as well, because I would have been in my 20s, and you also have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars, so it's a very privileged opportunity for those who can go through the candidate training program. But I was attending these workshops nonetheless and learning a lot. And one night, in the middle of a workshop, I had this terrible dream. And the dream was that some of the men from the Jung Foundation, there were many more men than there were women at the time, and but I saw them deep in a forest, and they were building a platform in the forest on a witch's grave, and I just understood this in the dream, and it was as if I wasn't actually present, it was as if I was observing this happening, and I knew that the witch was being presumed dead, but actually she started to wake up, and she was mad as hell, and she tore through the platform as if it were blowing dust off a surface, and she unleashed this rage, not just over these men, but anything that she could come into contact with. And it was chilling to the bone. I woke up from this dream, you know, drenched in sweat, completely terrified of this witch and her wrath, and shaking. And I had to go that morning to the rest of my workshop, but I was just kind of despondent. I couldn't reconcile being there in this place, and I understood right away that a kind of platform was being built upon something more ancient, something that, as Robert, you were saying, is this greater authority, a much greater authority. And I do believe that we can have a direct relationship with that powerful witch, if only we can, how do we say, remove the middleman, as it were, and relearn that mother tongue, that natural language which each of us, despite our geography, despite our age, despite our means, despite our spirituality, has an inherent right to speak.
Right. Well, I don't think I could have fallen off my chair almost laughing were I not a kind of soldier of the goddess Tokopa, because we know the goddess in this mode, Inanna riding out with a battle mace in her hand and her eyes red as carnelian, red as murder. We've seen this figure many times. I suppose that if I were a woman trying to balance all the elements of life, including the Jungian Foundation, I might be terrified at this vision, this multi-sensory, powerful vision of what the wild feminine can be like if it's not, you know, allowed to express itself in important ways. And, of course, this becomes one of the themes of your book and one of the most important themes, and something that Jungians will recognize. And you tell us about the necessity to recognize the dark side in ourselves and in the world, the necessity to recognize the dreams that reintroduce ourselves to the wild side of nature and to aspects of ourselves that we might otherwise leave repressed. And that's a very, very important part of your book. You write in one passage, I think you've taken off on Rumi's guest house, and you're talking about the need to befriend emotions as visitors that we might turn away if we didn't learn to deal with them in a more intelligent fashion. You write at this point that, you know, you're writing about shame, for example, and you say, we cover, the origin of the word shame means to cover, and then you say, quote, we cover the very things that make us what we are. Dreams, however, will go straight for those things and throw off the covers. They work tirelessly to retrieve our forgotten, neglected, and rejected soul parts. I mean, this is essential knowledge, and it goes wide and deep in your writing, and you've lived this. You've helped other people through this. You teach us all the ways in which dreams will help us to recognize our authentic feelings and give them expression, and also give us images by which we can, to some extent, domesticate them, not tame them, but we can apprivoiser. I mean, we can make gentle. We can make gentle these wild feelings with the help of our dreams. Talk to us a little bit about this theme. You call yourself, just to introduce this part, an ambassadress of the darkness, Toko Pau. I underline that phrase. Tell us about that.
Well, yes. Well, so I'm sure a lot of your listeners already understand how shadow forms. But shadow is really just a necessary part of being human. And we, unfortunately, are often raised in circumstances, be it our family homes or be it the over-culture that we live in, where certain qualities and aspects of ourselves are elevated and celebrated and aggrandized and encouraged, while other qualities, many of the things that fall under the purview of what we call the feminine, are devalued, denigrated, dismissed, derided, and sometimes, and maybe even worst of all, neglected, like not even acknowledged. And I say worst of all because when you are impervious to something, you allow it to be harmed. And so what happens in this kind of splitting is that we ourselves become split off from those aspects of us which have been shunned and shamed. And that's where the cover comes in. And we try to hide those parts of ourselves in what the poet Robert Bly calls the long black bag we drag behind us, which is the shadow. All of those things that we maybe at one point in our lives might have had a relationship with, like, for instance, our dreams, our imagination, our feelings, our intuition, our instincts, all of these things become split off from us so that they become refugees of even our own selves, right? They live on the margins of our own sense of acceptability and our culture's acceptability. And so they become distant from us, and they become other than us. Now, just to sort of tie in a larger piece here, there's a symmetry that occurs when we do this, because we also see how that then gets projected into the world. And right now we're living in a time where othering is causing all kinds of problems with racism, xenophobia, war, climate, all of these things. So this is the connection to belonging here, is that the work that I'm attempting to lay out in this book is that by befriending, becoming curious about, and even perhaps one day becoming welcoming or invitational towards those refugee aspects of the self, that we are actually working and creating belonging in our own lives. And once again, the symmetry of that is it carries out into the relationships we have in the outside world and collective consciousness as well.
Beautifully said, Toko Kai. Dreaming expands our humanity if we're open to what's going on, both in the sense that you say of recognizing refugee or denied or oppressed or dishonored aspects of ourselves and growing our sense of all that makes up a human being. Dreaming also sometimes puts us very directly in the situation of other people. I mean, some of us have what could almost be called body-hopping dreams in which we find ourselves in the situation looking from a perspective and sometimes even seemingly in the body of a different person in our own time or in another time. I mean, a man finds himself in the situation of a woman in a dream, and that's incredibly humbling and educational. Someone finds himself in the situation of someone in a different socioeconomic group. At one stage in my life, I would record dreams night after night in which I seem to be inhabiting the situation of several different people in my dreams in ways that I understood as being a crash course in expanding my understanding of what it means to be in a different person's situation, an African-American athlete, you know, some a complacent Republican country club Midwest white man. I didn't enjoy that experience very much. A woman going through what a woman goes through. So that's another way in which dreams expand our humanity, and it's an example of something you write about, again, in a very intriguing and provocative way when you say, I'm going to quote you again, well, you encourage us to view dream symbols as, quote, living, breathing beings who are choosing to visit us. This consorts very well with something I inhaled from the first people of my native Australia, the Aborigines, many years ago. The Aborigines say the big stories are hunting the right people to tell them. We could expand that and say the big stories are hunting the right people to live them. Dreams sometimes feel like that, and the wildness and beauty of your encouragement for us to see the dreams as having a life of their own, as living, breathing beings who need to be courted and recognized and honored. I mean, this is a very refreshing approach to dream work.
Thank you so much for that. It's so amazing to be speaking with you, and it's very rare to have another person in the world who is as obsessed about this stuff as you are. So I really
know. I mean, we've both provoked and inspired a lot of people to get passionate about this. I'm going to quote you one more time, possibly not the last time. I mean, I've read your book twice now, and I enjoyed it more the second time. I enjoyed it the first time. My favorite chapter, this won't surprise you, because I'm a story maker and storyteller, as you are. And actually, when I meet strangers on planes, and they ask me what I do, I'll sometimes say, well, I'm a storyteller, and it's a special pleasure and privilege for me to help people find their bigger and braver stories and live those stories and tell them so well that they want to take root in the world. That is actually the way I will introduce myself to a stranger on an airplane. Here's a bit from my favorite chapter, which is chapter 16, Story Worlds and Song Lines of Tokopar's book, Belonging. We'll give you more information on the book at the end of the segment and the end of the show. Here's what Tokopar says at the start of this chapter, quote, we are literally made of story. Every night, something in our biology compulsively spits out dream stories in order to keep us healthy. As essential as breathing, these stories have layers of usefulness that are part self-regulatory, part transmission of wisdom, and part connective tissue for networked intelligence, unconstrained by time and space. End of quote. What a rousing passage, Tokopar. This should stir up anybody who's sentient, anybody who's halfway alive and awake, to go out and seek and be available to find these stories that come upon us in dreams and help us to weave narratives of meaning for our lives and invite us to become authors of meaning for our lives as well as our dreams. Talk to us a little bit more about what story, what narrative means to you.
Well, you know, the particular emphasis of this book is on the subject of belonging, because in my own life, I tell a lot of my own biography in this book, and my story is that from a very young age, I felt a sense of unbelonging, of being an outsider in my family home. And so when I was really small, I started practicing at running away from home. And of course, I wasn't very successful at 9 or 10 years old, because when it would get dark, I would get hungry and I'd have to come home. And often I wouldn't even be noticed as missing, having been missing. So as I got older, I got better at running away. And when I was 15 years old, I left for good. And I was placed into the system. And the next years of my life were some of the darkest. But if there was one thing that came of being suddenly exiled, suddenly alone, not having any meaningful sense of guidance, is that I turned towards my journal. And I began for the first time in my life to keep a daily journal, because it was as if I needed something or someone to witness this big thing that was happening to me, which I didn't understand and I didn't know how to navigate it and was scary all the time. And the result of this relationship that I developed with my journal was that I started to honor my dreams and to write them down and be curious about them and make these kinds of courtships over years of trying to look at them from different angles and converse with them and try to understand what they wanted. But I always had this sense that there was a greater intelligence moving me in a certain direction. And if I was going in a wrong direction, it would disagree with me. It would have disagreements. And if I was going in a right direction, it would have rewards. Now, I should say that it took many, many, many years to understand these communications. But there was, like you said, that beautiful quote from the Aborigines, that there was this story attempting to find me through all of this, through my yearning to leave home, through my sense that there was something better in the world, through the writing down of my dreams and so on and so forth. There was something calling to me, and as it turned out, part of it was around this question of belonging, because I myself had suffered a whole lifetime with feeling as if I was on the outside looking in. And the story that I tell in my book is about how an event in present time, just from a number of years ago, caused me to reopen this wound, this original wound that I had with my family, to ask the questions around belonging in my own life. And that was when I realized that it was actually a huge epidemic in the world.
This is a great cliffhanger on which to pause. We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Tirka Turner. Her new wonderful book is Belonging, subtitled Remembering Ourselves Home. This is Robert Mouse. We'll be back with Way of the Dreamer after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest today is Turku Pap-Turner. Her book is Belonging, subtitle Remembering Our Self Home. I recommend it highly. We were talking a little bit before the break about the practice of keeping a journal and what that meant to Turku Pap in terms of coming home to herself after putting herself into exile. I've published 25 books the conventional way so far, but I know for sure the most important book I will ever write is my journal. I mean, I've been keeping it off and on since I was a teen and with dedicated passion for the last 35 years. It becomes, as you know, one's personal encyclopedia of symbols, becomes a place where you write yourself through different life passages, becomes a place where you dialogue with yourself. It becomes your scientific logbook of supernormal phenomena like precognition, telepathy, clairvoyance, this kind of thing. So I applaud you for telling us that keeping a journal was part of your finding your way back to belonging. One of the themes that must feature in your journal throughout, because it's so important in your book, is your relationship with your feet and with shoes and with dreams of both, because, you know, you had a cycle of dreams, which I would call shoeless in the city, and then you discovered in a very moving way, through a dream, you found yourself on the track of an ancestral story involving someone hurting his foot, a Holocaust survivor. Will you tell us about that episode?
Absolutely. It was a number of years ago. I woke up in the morning and I went to stand on my feet as normally I would, and it was as if I was standing on broken bones, on broken glass. I was in so much pain that I couldn't even walk down the stairs. I'd never had pain in my feet before, and so I was really shocked. And I thought, well, this is some weird thing. It's going to pass in a few days. But it didn't. It didn't pass in a few days, and then it didn't pass in weeks or months. And I literally overnight became disabled, unable to walk or stand for any length of time. Even going to the bathroom often resulted in me being in tears because it was excruciating. And the doctors didn't really know what was wrong with me, and I wouldn't be diagnosed with rheumatoid disease for another couple of years, actually. But so as a result of not knowing what was wrong with me and in being so much pain, I suddenly became incredibly isolated. I wasn't able to leave the house. We didn't even have a car at the time, so I couldn't get about. And I really was taken deep into descent into my own psyche and in confrontation with some of those questions around belonging, around being exiled, right? Because here I was kind of literally re-experiencing being outside of everything. And that was when I had a powerful dream several months into this condition. And in the dream, I found myself in a kind of refugee state where there was a curfew and we were being kept in prison camps, and there was some sort of militaristic overlord, and I was outside of curfew times, and I knew that I could get in trouble, and they had taken away our shoes and boots. And I was barefoot in the city, which is a theme that I talk about throughout my book because I had dreams like this earlier in life. But when I woke up from this particular dream, I had such a strong, there was such a strong echo in these images from my own ancestral story, because my grandfather, both of my grandparents were Holocaust survivors, and they were in Warsaw in wartime. And my grandfather was kept in a prison camp in the ghetto for 3 years. And so a lot of the images in this dream really caused me to question, what is the connection between what is happening in my body, in my life, and which came out of my ancestral story. And so I began to look at the genealogy of our family, and we had crafted this whole family tree, but the Jewish branch of my family was ominously empty because we didn't know anything, right? And we were always told that everything was lost in the Holocaust. So we didn't know names. We didn't know anything. Just my grandfather's name was there. And I had all of this time on my hands, so I undertook, with the help of Jewish genealogy organizations around the world, to repopulate my family tree through through the Nazi records, and it led to this whole journey that I tell in the book of finally traveling to some of my ancestral homelands and meeting some of the people that knew them, and really ultimately in the end reconnecting with a living member of my long-lost family.
Yes, it gave you very good directions, that dream, for the research that led you to fill in the blank in the family tree, so to speak. And it reminds us how often dreams may call us into an ancestral material, which might be revealing and it might be mutually healing across time to us in our present time and someone else in their now time. It's a very moving story. I think about dreams of shoes, all the ones that have been shared with me, all of my own. And so often it's about, you know, whether a certain role in life fits someone. I remember a Freudian shrink years ago who told me that she'd stopped being a Freudian shrink after she dreamed repetitively that her shoes just didn't fit her. They were achingly awful. She couldn't walk in her shoes. She decided eventually with some self-awareness that those shoes represented the approach, the Freudian doctrinal approach and the particular practice she was doing at the time. Shoes in the dreams of English speakers, of Anglophones, often seem to have something to do with soul. I mean, we hear the wordplay between S-O-U-L and S-O-L-E. And I often think when I look at dreams of shoes about what is the state of this person's soul. If they're missing a shoe, have they lost part of themselves? If the shoes are untied and can't be tied up, what's happening to family ties? So dreams of shoes are endlessly interesting, and of course their meaning covers a spectrum of possibilities. But your dream of trouble with your feet and issues with shoes took you into deep and moving ancestral territory. Thank you for sharing that with us. Something else that you write about, you probably do a lot more with it in your workshops and in your own dream journals, is you write about the role of animals in our dreams. You do have a remarkable dream from someone you call Marika in your book about a blindfolded horse. And then you say this, quote, I'm quoting you again, "When you dream of a wild animal, you are touching the part of yourself that can never be domesticated." Really interesting. Talk to us a little bit more about the role of animals in your dreams and as you understand animals in other people's dreams.
Well, I would say the dreams that I've had of coming into contact with wild animals are the greatest dreams ever. They are the most miraculous and so full of awe and magic and telepathy that I have to say that the animals in my dreams have been my greatest teachers, full stop. So this kind of comes back to the thing we were talking about before, about treating your dreams as living, breathing beings, because I like to think of it this way, you know, let's say you're walking in a deep, dark forest and you come across a wild fox and it freezes and you freeze and you look into his eyes and he looks into your eyes and there is a moment that you can feel a powerful opening in your heart and maybe your heart starts beating faster and you feel your own wildness when you look into the fox's eyes. And what does he see when he looks at you? Well, so you wouldn't then dream dictionary and look up what does fox mean. Fox means you will be stealthy and steal something, or I don't know what. This would give a very unsatisfying answer. Instead, you want to ask, what does it want? What does it need? What is it powerful with and that I am coming into contact with?
Very interesting that you chose the fox. And fox in encounter as your example for that passionate moment. We'll come back to the dream animals of Tokatar Turner after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back. Her new book is called Belonging. We'll be back in a moment.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies daily oral rinse and toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Tokatar Turner. Her new book is Belonging. I should mention my new book, or recent book, is Mysterious Realities, subtitle Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. You might find that fun to consider also. We had so much to cover with Tokatar. We started talking about the animals, and she gave us such a vivid impression of meeting a wild fox in the woods and looking into its eyes that we were right there with her. My life wouldn't be what it is except for animal encounters in dreams or in nature, or sometimes both weaving back and forth. The fox to me, Tokatar, always, this is not Dream Dictionary stuff. In my life, when the fox turns up, I have to pay attention. I know I have to expect the unexpected. The way is not going to be straight. I'd better be ready to shift and change. I was talking at the Esalen Institute once about the fox as my favorite archetype of the trickster. And people started laughing at me more loudly than I thought they had reason to do. And finally someone said, look behind you. I look, nothing. I go on talking about the fox. They laugh again. Look again, look, Robert. I look again, nothing. They start laughing and say, Robert, every time you mention the fox, a fox puts his head up looking at you through the window. But when
what?
You turn around to look at him, you can't see him. This went on repeatedly. I met the fox on the path afterwards, but I could never see the fox when he was looking in on us when I was talking about the fox as a trickster. I mean, that's a very foxy situation. I've had this encounter with the fox all my life, and the fox connects me to ancestral things. Just as the moving dream you told us does, it connects me to ancestral stories. It takes me back to the time of that so-called Druid Prince that Anne Ross wrote about in The Life and Death of a Druid Prince, the man found in a bog in northern England with fox fur around his neck. So, you know, we have these connections. And I know, as you do, that these are not things to be looked up in some kind of encyclopedia of symbols. They're things to be studied. We need to study the animal in nature, how it hides, how it hunts, how it mates, how it courts, how it feeds. Because we might need to embody some of that if we're going to live the energy fully. We need to track it through tradition, through legend and folklore and mythology, and learn from it and never call it my fox or my bear or my lion, because that's not how it is. So
you have that
quiveringly alive in you.
That's why I really love the word courtship, because it's this very old-timey art form which has been lost in modern culture. But it's the idea that you have to circle something, but from a respectful distance, to learn about it and perhaps gain its trust and be invited deeper into relationship with it, and hopefully to the point of being able to make some kind of allyship or marriage. So I love this approach to working with dreams, because a lot of people think of dreams in an acquisitional sense, you know, that what am I here? If I figure this out with my brain, then I'm going to get something at the end of it, and it's going to tell me what I should do, what I should get, or what I need to know. But this is very kind of like, in a way, we're turning these things into acquisitions, you know, turning dreams into acquisitions. But I think the much more fulfilling thing is to be in relationship with them. And then there's a back and forth conversation that can take place from that sort of approach. And instead you're asking questions like, what does it want? What does it love? What does it require from me?
Yes. You put that very well. Dreams require us to do much more than analyze or interpret. I mean, they invite us to practice real magic. We all have different definitions of that. You have a nice one in your book. My personal definition of real magic is the art of bringing gifts from one world into another world. And we do that with dreams when we bring energy, healing, guidance, mystery from the dream into this world. And that's more important than the analysis or interpretation. Yes, dreams have messages that need to be clarified and harvested. Some of those messages can save your life or your job or your body's health or your relationship. But like you, I understand that dreams have living energies that we can bring through. For me, sometimes, as for traditional Aboriginal people like the Kukaja out in the Western Desert in Australia, for me it's sometimes enough to say, as they will say when they're telling a dream while the billy boils over the fire, this nomadic people, they will say, oh, good dream, that one. They might say, a good dream, sweet as tea. I mean, the dream is an event in itself. It is an entertainment. It is a story. It is an experience in some order of reality, no less real than this one. And it is sometimes enough to celebrate it, to enjoy the fact that you've been in it and can now bring it and share it as communal entertainment and instruction. Sometimes I'm like that. Let's talk about daily practice as dreamers and for dreamers. Kirkita, what is your daily practice as a dreamer in relation to all of this?
Well, like everyone, I have ebbs and flows in my dreaming practice. And I think it's taken me a long time to find a rhythm with it. There were times where I was so obsessed with my dreams, I would have four or five a night, and I would write them down in great detail. But then I think it contributed to me being less anchored in practical world, in ordinary world. And so, and then there would be times where I would be so involved in my external life that my dreams would recede and dry up. And so I have found a kind of rhythm where if I am working with one or two dreams, but very deeply in a week, then I am feeling a sense of balance and connection in my life. And so I have really had a big obstacle in the progression of my disease in this last year, because I've become unable to use my hands anymore. I've lost a lot of ability in my hands, and so this has made it impossible to handwrite. And I can tell type a little bit, but for me it's not the same as the, you know, I have such a deep relationship with a physical journal and a pen and all that. So I am flailing a little bit right now with my own practice and trying to find a way forward so that I can write again. People say, well, why don't you use a dictaphone? But it comes from a different place, doesn't it? Orating versus writing.
Yes, I don't want to dictate my dreams when I'm still close to them. I of course do lots of online courses and radio shows and get transcriptions and so on, and I'm quite accustomed to seeing transcriptions of what I say, and I speak rather close to how I write. But I don't want to work my vocal cords somehow, except maybe to a living partner, when I've just come out of the dream space. It doesn't suit me, and perhaps sounds it doesn't suit you either. I'm so sorry about the condition of your disease, Tokopa. Are your dreams helping you with it in any way?
I have gotten a few confirmations here and there, but my life has become very, very physical at the moment and just dealing with day-to-day body stuff. So, like I say, these things go in cycles, you know, so my hope is that there will be a light at the end of this particular tunnel, and I'll be able to return to much more of my own personal dream work.
I hope so. We're talking to Tokopa Turner. Her book is Belonging. This is Robert Nuss on the Way of the Dreamer radio show. We'll be back with one more segment after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Where's the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our guest is Tokopa Turner, Canadian author, dream worker. Her new book is Belonging. We're talking a little bit about pain, disease, and we were on the edge during the break of talking about whether there's a gift in the wound. Let me give a small example myself, Tokopa. I was pronounced clinically dead twice as a boy. I was one of those children who couldn't seem to stay in the world. I had double pneumonia 12 times over 8 years. They almost wanted to keep me in a bubble. You didn't technologically have that in Australia in those days. I think the gift for me at that time was the gift of being able to leave the body and have mobility of consciousness anytime, anywhere, and to suppress the experience of physical pain. Track forward in my life to 4 months ago when I had total knee replacement, essentially, because arthritis had destroyed the cartilage in my left knee. The pain after the surgery was one that I could not ignore, and I'm someone who'd done root canal 6 times with no anesthetics. I could not ignore the pain. So I came to understand that, as you say in your book, pain can be tethering. I was tethered to the body, Tokopa, for 2 weeks. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't dream during sleep, and most important, because hypnagogia is my favorite zone, the place between sleep and awake, I couldn't do much of anything in terms of using my imagination to take me away from the body. This was humbling, and when I look at the gift of it was I learned I had to dream with my body as well as outside my body. I had to listen to my body with some humility, with some respect. And also I had to be willing to ask for help, which I've been rather bad at doing. So that's just talking from my personal point of view about trying to find gifts in a situation which you might feel awfully sorry for yourself, but there is still maybe a gift to be found in the wound. Does any of that speak to you?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to say something then. Yes, well, this is the story of my life. I appreciate you sharing some of your epic stories of illness. That's a lot. And, rheumatoid disease is essentially like what happened with your knee, except it never ends. And so you have that for the rest of your life of just like a inescapable tethering pain. And so if there has been one consistent message through my dreams throughout this process, it has been about just getting somatically conscious and always listening to the body first. And often this means saying no a great deal of the time for me, which has been a very hard thing because I'm someone who actually built a spirituality around yesness, of really wanting to say yes to a lot of things and be engaged in a lot of life. But now I'm having to say no a lot. And the result is that I'm developing this very deep communication with and from my body. And now all of the work that I do with dreams is primarily through a somatic lens, not just what is that the dreams actually come from the body, as you say. They emanate from our bodies, but also to be in communication with the earth body and what is happening all around us on the land that we stand on and how to weave.
Yes, this is so important to understand that dreaming can be from and with the body as well as from and with the soul. I mean, some of us, perhaps certainly like me, perhaps like you too, who've had little difficulty dissociating from the body and traveling in consciousness anywhere we feel like going or feel invited to go, might lose for some period of time a sufficiently strong connection with the body. I mean, the gift for me in the knee replacement of the pain afterwards was I was required to stay in my body, and it made me also far more empathetic and far more sympathetic to the situation of other people, much more able to feel their pain and share it with them, and also much more interested in the old-fashioned approach to medicine, which old-fashioned general practitioners used to have. It's still there in Chinese medicine. It's there in the annals of medicine cross-culturally. The old-fashioned doctor, the old-fashioned physician understood that dreams might reveal what's going in the body. There might be a distress call or an inner X-ray or MRI from inside the body showing what's going on. One of those wise old Greeks, a pinnacle of rationalism and science in medicine in his day, Galen, wrote a treatise on diagnosis in dreams and revealed how dreams had saved him from what he thought was a disease that could have taken his life by showing him what it was and what was required, how he worked with dreams with all of his patients, and how his theory of this, of dreaming with the body, is that psyche, consciousness, travels through the body during the night, and in the morning, if we are attentive, will reveal to the waking person what the situation in the body is. So, as I say, it's been humbling for me to recognize that this is so very, very important, but I think it applies to all of us.
Absolutely, yeah.
One more thing from Toka Pa's book. Quote, "The reason I love working with dreams to heal trauma is that dreams cast our problems into images we can relate to," unquote. This is so important. In imaginal healing and healing through the imagination, I have found, and a lot of other studies suggest, that imagery that is symbolic rather than literal and anatomical can help to cure things and heal things because it gives you more magic to play with. So the idea that whatever the issue is, dreams cast our problems into images we can relate to and reshape and work with and dream onward is a very pregnant and provocative thought. Do you have anything more to say to us about that?
Well, yes. I mean, I think for a lot of people, the experience of having nebulous grief or nebulous longing, something that's kind of indistinct, can feel very oppressive and can pull us down and generate moods and illness and crisis and all of these things. And so long as we don't really have any sense of its dimensionality, we can't really begin to heal those places until we really know what's happening there. So that's the beauty of the dream, is that it creates the thing in a form. See quite literally what the dynamic is, whether it's a psychodynamic or a situation that's going on in our lives, or something like an inherited or a trauma of some kind. We can begin to understand its dimensionality, which will then allow us to know how to begin to dismantle it or bring healing elements to
part of the craft and the craftiness of dreams. There are so many kinds of dreams, but I'm increasingly convinced there's a type of dream which is a made-for-us movie, a made-for-us film, that each of us has our own production company behind the curtains of our consensual hallucinations that puts together shows for us some nights and has all of this in mind. We've been talking to Toko Pau-Turner, author of Belonging, Canadian author and dream worker. We'll be back really to say thank you and dream on after the break. This is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
We've been talking with Toko Pau-Turner, Canadian author and dream worker, author of Belonging. Toko Pau, thank you so much for encouraging us to court our dreams and to come out of false belonging and home to ourselves. Thank you.
It's been such an honor and a delight to speak with you, Robert.
A pleasure to be with someone whose passion for dreams is as deep as my own and who does such good and beautiful work in bringing that gift to others. Thank you again, Toko Pau. May you be well in all ways and may your very best dreams come true.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much.
All right. For everybody, from now until next time, may your best dreams come true and may you remember them.